You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to BGN Radio with Brandon Lee Gowton and Jimmy Kemsky.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? This is BGN Radio, episode number 292. I am Jimmy Kemsky from PhillyVoice.com. With me, as always, is Brandon Lee Gowton of Bleeding Green Nation. Got a lot to get to in this episode. We will cover CJGJ's lacerated kidney, where the Eagles stand after that. We'll get to some other injury stuff. Jordan Davis, Avante Maddox, Dallas Goedert, etc. We'll sort of recap a little bit late, but we'll recap the Eagles-Packers game. We'll get to a preview of Eagles-Titans, and we'll make our picks for the Eagles and the NFC East and the Saints. But before we get to all that, Brandon, first of all, how you doing, buddy? And what do you have to tell us?
Jimmy, we're kind of back on our BS, if you will, our one show per week schedule as opposed to the two we were splitting up, just because I'll take the blame. Scheduling, it's been more convenient to do the one, so sorry about that. I think we're going to try to aim to do the two when we can. But before we get into today's show, I have to mention that since it is a preview show in addition to a recap show, that BGN Radio is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. It is the place to go when betting on the NFL this holiday season. New customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. Plus, everyone can earn up to a 100% boost with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code 5Questions. Place a $5 bet on any NFL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets. If they do, that's code 5Questions only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Jimmy, I listened back to the disclaimer last week that I'm about to do right now. Uh-huh. And I did think I did a good job with it. So let's see.
Yeah, if I thought it was good.
Thank you.
Pressure's on to keep to be. It's not just about having one good game.
That's right.
And then that's it. You got to be consistent.
That's true. So here we go. 21 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details and state-specific responsible gambling resources. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. Bonus issued as free bets, one boost per eligible game. Opt-in required, 10 plus leg required for 100% boost. Deposit, parlay, and wagering restrictions apply. Eligibility and terms at sportsbook.draftkings.com/football terms.
Give it a solid A-.
Okay. So I could do a little better. It's fine.
Yeah. You can't, like, you know, give you the grit. You got to leave some room for for improvement. Can't just, you know, can't let you rest on your laurels. All right. Big news coming out of the Eagles-Packers game was, of course, the CJGJ, Chauncey Gardner Johnson, in case you're unfamiliar with that nickname, injury. He lacerated his kidney. He looked messed up on the field, dude. Like, after that hit, he was down on the ground for a while. It went to commercial break, so if you weren't at the game, you didn't see that. But he couldn't get up for a while. And then when he finally did, he looked bad, like being helped off the field. And then even when he was getting carted in, he was doubled over in pain. Mm-hmm. They originally classified it as a rib injury, and there may still be ribs as part of the injury. It's sort of unclear.
Jeff McLean had said that. I think that was not the case, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay. Anyway, well, the main part of the injury became, whether the ribs are involved or not, a lacerated kidney, which, by the way, the Just the word yeah. lacerated.
It sounds just bad.
It just sounds so bad. And clearly it sounds very painful. And obviously it was just by watching him, you know, suffer from that injury after it happened. But he's out, and to be determined how long that'll be for. This is a guy who is still leading the NFL with 6 interceptions this season. He's been an impact player for the Eagles defense, frankly, and has made a lot of big plays. A lot of them were just him sort of being in the right place at the right time, but there's something to be said for that. But yeah, he's obviously had a great season and was replaced in the lineup by Reed Blankenship, who I believe that you and I both can take credit for being high on the Blankenship train all throughout training camp in the preseason. So you all owe us the praise for Reed Blankenship as opposed to Reed Blankenship himself for the way that he played.
That's right.
I'm just kidding, of course, for the way that he played on Sunday night. But what did you see from Reed in that game?
Yeah, I mean, I think Bo Wolf, you know, that was like his training camp crush. I think, and I think you both you and him were on it earlier than me.
I'll take this step back.
Well, I mean, you further. From a standpoint of yeah, you like going back to his college, but I mean, in the context of like training camp,
yeah.
So yeah, originally you from like the prospect standpoint, Bo yeah. maybe from it, you know, like he, I think he definitively like declared him as his training camp crush. I would say though, I like have been banging the drum the hardest for him, like since, you know, I've been saying, why is Kayvon Wallace the third safety? It should be Reed Blankenship. I think I was beating that drum the loudest. So I think we can all take credit here in different ways.
No, I'm taking the most credit because I profiled him as a prospect in 2020. And then again, in 2021.
What does that mean though? I mean, you did it once.
It means that I was in on him. You didn't even know who he was until a few months ago. I've been on this guy for 2 years. No, I get years. That,
but like, I don't know why doing it twice means anything. I would just say you've done it since 2020. The second time it doesn't mean anything.
He,
to me. You did it.
It
since
means he was on my radar consistently and for a long period of time.
Well, I mean, if he's on your radar once, he's on your radar forever. I feel like
you guys have no argument here. He's my.
I'm not
guy,
trying to take credit from you. I'm just saying I don't.
He's can't. My guy. Anyway. I would rank it me, Bo, and then you.
Okay, there you go. Thank you. Where no one cares. Anyway, the point is, Ghost is his nickname, as some Eagles teammates referred to him, and it's really funny. I don't know if my friend Zach, he was telling me that during the game, his friends were calling him Ghost, and I don't know if they knew that or they just somehow came to that nickname on their own. But in any case, I do like that nickname for him. Reed Blankenship picking off Aaron Rodgers, becoming the first undrafted rookie free agent to ever do so. Aaron Rodgers has played like over 200 games and whatever, 200 and whatever games, and attempted like over 7,000 something passes. Like that's Reed Blankenship becomes the first. And it was not like a fluky interception, like the way, you know, Josiah Scott's was a tip ball. Like Reed Blankenship made a great play. And like, I was super impressed by that. I said the RJ and the NFC East mixtape, which came out earlier today and you should listen to. That reminded me of like Malcolm Butler picking up Russell Wilson in the Super Bowl in terms of like
yeah, it's a good call.
Exploding to the ball out of nowhere and like, holy crap, like that's an incredible interception. So, you know, I thought he showed some good promise early on. And I think that's not like a fluke in terms of what stood out to me so much in training camp wasn't just like the splash plays in terms of it was also just being in the right place. I thought so often he was at the right place, the right time. He just like such a savvy, smart player. So I definitely think there is something to that. And, you know, he also gave up that long touchdown. He took a bad angle to Christian Watson. And maybe that wasn't all on him, but he certainly played a role in that. And I think you could see his athletic limitations on display, not being able to catch up to Christian Watson, who in fairness is incredibly fast. But I think there's some reasonable hope he might be able to come in and give some decent production.
Yeah. I mean, so when I look at his game, you mentioned the interception. Fran Duffy did a great job of sort of breaking down that play, but he did it more from the perspective of the defense that was the call that on the defensive call on that play where they disguised, they made it look like it was going to be single high coverage with Blankenship playing the single high role, and they sort of rotated into more of a two high look. And when Rodgers threw it, he was expecting single high, it looked like. And like you said, he exploded on that ball. It was intended for 84. I don't know who 84's name is. But when 84 made his break to the inside, Blankenship, I mean, just immediately broke on that play and beat him to the spot. And I mean, that was a legit, really, really nice interception. But more so the instincts, and mm-hmm. he trusted what he saw, and he acted on it. And you don't see that oftentimes from rookies, much less undrafted rookies. Great play by him. I thought he had two other really nice plays too. So there was a play where Rodgers dropped back. It was play action to the running back, and then also another play action look on a receiver coming around the edge. So it was two fake handoffs. And he was looking for Christian Watson coming across from the top of the screen to the bottom of the screen, from the left side of the field to the right side of the field, deep down the field. And Blankenship did not bite in any way on either of those play action looks. Was where he needed to be. It wasn't there. And Rodgers took a sack. And then there was another play where Reed's in the middle of the field, and it's a run play to Aaron Jones. He is running toward the line of scrimmage by like two or three steps before anyone else in the secondary reacts. So he had this undrafted rookie free agent who sees what's happening on this play way before anyone else on the defense. And he tracks down Aaron Jones near the sideline for a gain of like one. I think it was second and 10 at the time. And he put them in a third long situation. So just three really good plays from him. And then you mentioned the interception, or excuse me, not the interception, the touchdown to Christian Watson. He took a bad angle on that. And then, as you mentioned, Christian Watson's fast. He's ran a 4.36, I believe, at the combine. Reed Blankenship ran a 4.55, I believe, at Middle Tennessee State's pro day. And you saw the difference on the field on that, where both he and Marcus Epps could not catch Christian Watson. So, you know, that's probably why, part of the reason why he wasn't drafted. He's certainly athletic. His other athletic testing measurables are fine, but just doesn't have great speed. He's going to have to rely on his instincts. He's going to have to adjust to the speed of the game, because you don't have athletes, you know, that Middle Tennessee State is playing on a week-to-week basis that you see in the NFL. So he's going to have to adjust to that. But I think a lot more good than bad in his first real NFL action in the regular defense.
Yeah, so I would be willing to kind of see what he has, at least for now. Mm-hmm. I would not be like, I don't think it's the situation where, okay, it's like what the Eagles kind of did at defensive tackle. Basically, mm-hmm. with Jordan Davis going down, they had to sign Sue, and they had to sign Linval Joseph. I don't think it's that quite yet. Although, very interesting that John Clark, I'd say friend of the show,
sure,
for his Takeoff podcast, recently interviewed Malcolm Jenkins, and Jenkins was like, did not really rule out, now this is before the CJGJ injury to be clear, but he didn't really rule out, you know, contributing in a stretch run kind of scenario. So what do you make of that? Do you think the Eagles will actually re-sign Malcolm Jenkins?
I don't, there's some gray area there too, because he signed a contract that did not expire when he retired. Yeah. So the Saints still hold his rights. If he wanted to play, I'm sure the Saints would probably waive him.
I think they'd have to do right by him. I don't think you can get away with not doing that.
Yeah. And he'd have to clear waivers.
Which also, but of course,
But nobody's going to claim him unless, you know, nobody's going to claim him unless they know he wants to play for them. So I think the Eagles could bring him back if they really wanted to make that happen.
Right.
I'm kind of with you in that I think you roll with Reed Blankenship for now, and mm-hmm. you wait for C.J. Gardner-Johnson to come back. And I think this also ties into the severity of this injury, which is very difficult to predict.
Right.
So this is not like an ACL where you know a player is going to be back in 9 months, or an Achilles where it's going to be, you know, 7-8 months or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not very uncommon. They do happen, like Keenan Allen and Andrew Luck both lacerated their kidneys in 2015. Zach Ertz lacerated a kidney in 2019. Mm-hmm. Keenan Allen and Andrew Luck missed the rest of the season after they lacerated their kidneys. They both missed at least 7 games. I believe Luck missed 7. Keenan Allen missed 8. Ertz missed 1 game and came back and played in a playoff game. So there are different – I talked to a urologist, actually. We're recording this on Wednesday. I talked to him Tuesday night, and he explained there's you know, like with any injury, really, there's different grades. There's grade 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Grade 5 kidney injury is basically like the kidney's got to go.
Yikes.
Grade 1 kidney laceration is basically just a bruise. So I don't know. We don't know like what grade of injury that Chauncey Gardner-Johnson has, but if it's just a bruise, then he can come back. I don't know if they would have called it a kidney laceration if it were just a bruise, but the timetable is a lot shorter that way. Andrew Luck, when he lacerated his kidney, it was originally the timetable for return was 2 to 6 weeks, which is already kind of a long range anyway, but his kidney took longer to heal than was anticipated. And again, he missed the rest of the season. So it's an injury that's very difficult to pinpoint the return, and you're not going to hear, the Eagles aren't going to reveal much in the way of injuries as it is, but especially in this case, it's going to be very difficult for them to even know when he's going to be back. So if he may or may not go on injured reserve this week, if he does go on injured reserve, then we know he's going to miss at least the next 4 games.
It seems like he should, shouldn't he? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what's the, can he play it safe like that?
They should. I mean, because it's just regular season games at this point. Yeah. Like Zach Ertz came back for a playoff game and did so against the recommendations from doctors, too, is my understanding.
Right.
But just if Chauncey Gardner-Johnson doesn't go on IR, it doesn't mean that he'll be back within the next 4 weeks. Because
right.
It's just, again, it's such a difficult injury to set a timetable on. So, again, they'll have a better idea than you and I, of course, on how long they think the recovery will be. And that would play a part, that would factor into whether they add another safety or not.
Mm-hmm.
They do have Kayvon Wallace, who Reed Blankenship jumped in the pecking order to become the number 3 safety. And they have Andre Sacheret, who they added to the regular roster 3 weeks ago. There are other guys around the league that you can maybe add. It'd be easier to add them, like Landon Collins, for example, who's probably more of a linebacker than a safety at this point in his career. He's on the Giants practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
They have another guy that I forget his name off the top of my head, but the Rams cut him like two, 3 weeks ago. Terrell Burgess, thank you.
And then there's
On the Giants practice squad.
Elijah Riley.
Elijah Riley is another one.
Steelers practice squad.
Is he with the Jets? Steelers, okay. And so somebody was with the Jets too. That
he used to be on the Jets.
I think there's somebody now also on the Jets.
Will
Jared
Parks.
Maiden, maybe.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Ugo Amadi, who they traded for. I don't think he's going to be an option.
No.
But yeah, it's slim pickings. And the Eagles have been in on safeties at multiple points this year. Of course, they scoured the league when they traded for CJGJ. And then at the trade deadline, they had some interest in maybe trading for a safety, but they – you know, there just wasn't much available. So I'm with you. I do think they'll ultimately roll with Reed Blankenship for a while.
For now.
No need to hit a panic button if they play this game and he's getting torched. By the way, the three of their next 4 opponents are the Giants, Bears, Titans. Well, I guess in order we'll go Titans, Giants, Bears.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all 3 of those teams are in the top 5 in the NFL. In terms of run pass ratio, they're all very run heavy teams. So you can probably survive with a guy like Reed Blankenship in the short term because they're not teams that are really good at threatening down the field with their wide receivers.
Yeah, I think CJGJ losing him hurts, you know, because this is a guy who leads the NFL in interceptions. And, you know, some of those have been, I think, fortuitous, but there is something to him making plays on the ball and being something of a ball magnet. Like that much has been consistent throughout his career. So definitely a downgrade. And just from an athleticism standpoint too, you know, from him down to Reed and then the depth. Although I did think, for as much as I have been a Kevon Wallace detractor, thought he came in and gave the Eagles 3 quality snaps when he had to play at the end of that Packers game, broke up a pass in the end zone to prevent a touchdown. So that was nice to see, especially when we haven't seen a lot of flashes from him. But yeah, certainly not great. And just like the attrition here on the whole, you know, like you lost Jordan Davis, although he might come back, which we'll talk about soon. Goddard, Maddox, like they're taking on water a little bit on the injury front, which is just not ideal. Although, you know, these guys do have chances to return. It's not like they're all, you know, ACLs and they're just done and there's zero chance they can come back. But the thing is too, if they do come back, you know, it's a question of, you know, how much are they going to be like towards 100%? Like, you know, how effective will they be? They might be able to be out there, you know, but are they going to be the same kind of impact players? So that's something to wonder about. Moving it along and going to Jordan Davis, he's eligible to return this week. Nick Sirianni was certainly not revealing at all when being asked about if he will be activated from injured reserve. You know, we'll see today, Wednesday. You know, if he would play this week, they would activate his practice window today. Mm-hmm. And they really haven't. So it's interesting how they've handled that. I think more often than not this season, like I know with the Dillard injury return, Sirianni kind of talked about how they didn't really feel comfortable throwing him into the fire right away. That could be now, you know, in part because he's a backup and they have more of a luxury to kind of to wait on him. Although Mailata was kind of banged up at the time, so that's not necessarily the case entirely. But I think they feel like ideally they want to kind of onboard the guy with a week of conditioning and then maybe activate him that second week. I think with their run defense, maybe they would be a little bit motivated to try to jumpstart Jordan Davis here, but we don't know if he's ready to play. I know Jeff McLean had noted he had seen him kind of like jogging in the tunnel after the Packers game. So that seems like a good sign, but we'll see.
Yeah, I saw him too. So he did run off the field and in through the tunnel and to the locker room. He ran. Okay. And I don't know how much you can tell from that, but I thought that was a good enough sign. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see what the rotation looks like too whenever he returns, because since they've added Linval Joseph, he's played really well and he's solidified their rush defense when he's been in games. And I don't think you take him out of that role. I think that you know, certainly you give Jordan Davis some of those snaps back, but, you know, to keep Linval Joseph's snaps down as well, because, you know, I don't think you want a 34-year-old player playing, you know, over, you know, 30, 40 snaps per game. So he'll get some of those snaps. But it'll be interesting to see also how much Jordan Davis's role is expanded, because originally this season he was almost solely playing in those odd man fronts as a nose tackle.
Exclusively before the Steelers game. Yeah. Where he got hurt.
And then in the Steelers game that he got hurt, his role was expanded in that game early on.
And then he gets hurt.
He was playing in some four man fronts and he gets hurt. And then that was the end of that. So it'll be interesting to see how quickly they pick back up with that, or if they feel like he needs some time to get back into, you know, what he is, you know, what he sort of has down pat before they, you know, continue to expand his role. But with Linval Joseph in the fold, you'd imagine, I would think anyway, that they'll give him some opportunities. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting also to see, like, if they'll play together, if they'll be on the field at the same time, and you have basically 700 pounds of run-stopping meat in the middle of your defense, and, you know, how well they play together. So, I mean, they're just loaded up with interior defensive linemen at this point. Just to rattle off names, and these a lot of big names in this group too: Linval Joseph, Jordan Davis, Fletcher Cox, Javon Hargrave, Milton Williams, Ndamukong Suh. It's crazy, like how many, you know, sort of notable defensive tackles they have. And then on the edge, I think we saw some good play out of Josh Sweat on Sunday night. Hassan Reddick has had a good season for them, and Brandon Graham, in a limited role this season, mm-hmm. has produced, you know, only playing like 20 snaps per game. So it's a very good looking and a very deep, talented defensive line that they have at this point.
You said good looking, like handsome too. You think these guys are?
Yeah,
you
know, sure.
Okay. So I think I was looking through this, and it's very funny to me how there's a very clear demarcation when it comes to Fletcher Cox's playing time. I thought Fletcher Cox had his best game, or at least in some time. His first sack since week three. So I would keep rotating them heavy because I think that's what's best. And also, like, when it comes to Cox specifically, he's done better. His best game this year in terms of, like, he had 1.5 sacks against Washington week three. That came with his fewest playing time of the season. And So there's a demarcation where in the six games, he's played at least 70% of the snaps, 0 sacks, 0 TFLs, 2 quarterback hits. Not good.
Oh, really? 0 tackles for loss too, huh?
Yeah. In the 5 games, he's played 66% of the snaps or fewer. 4 mm-hmm. sacks, 4 TFLs, 6 quarterback hits. So there is something to that. Yeah. Like, playing him less is the key. You know, he cannot handle playing these big workloads. So you want to get – I mean, obviously, you know, you still want him on the field at some point. So it's about finding that sweet spot. But yeah, so I would say when you're bringing Davis back, like you want to keep this heavy rotation going. I think there is something to that. It does kind of help everyone, give the most out of the reps they're working with.
All right. Let's get to the Eagles Packers.
Let's take a break
takeaways.
Here. Why not take a break? Okay. Because, you know, we're going to go long. We're already at the 24-minute mark anyway. If we don't take a break here, we won't do it until like 40 minutes into the podcast or beyond. So we'll take a quick break here. Right before we do, I will tell you about Righteous Felon Craft Jerky. Go to righteousfelon.com. Use discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order. They are the meat snacks that the Eagles themselves snack on at the NovaCare Complex. They have it at their little fueling station. And you'll see Righteous Felon Craft Jerky around in stores. And if you do, give it a try, and then if you want a bunch in bulk with all the flavors available to you, which might not be the case in the store, then you go to righteousfelon.com and use discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order. Jimmy.
Back after this.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Back here on BGN Radio, we're about to talk about the Eagles-Packers game. Jimmy, what's your big takeaway? By the way, as this was recording, I meant to mention that Jalen Hurts, probably should start with him. He was named NFC Offensive Player of the Week.
That makes sense. That's actually a good segue to this game. Because how many rushing yards did he have in this game?
He had 157 rushing yards, which is the new franchise record previously held by Michael Vick from the Miracle at the New Meadowlands game back in 2010.
Okay. Yeah, obviously the Eagles run. I mean, their rushing offense was the story of the game. Miles Sanders had a great game as well. He had a career high, I believe, as well. But they ran for 363 yards, was it? Mm-hmm. Which was second all time in franchise history. It's the most rushing yards they've had since 1948.
In 74 years.
It was the 16th best rushing team rushing performance in NFL history. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, to say that they ran the ball well in that game is a little bit of an understatement. The Packers contributed to that to some degree because that team just can't tackle. That team sucks. Like, that is a horrible, horrible defense, and the Eagles ran right through them. But we got to give credit, of course, where it's due. Packers tried to play a lot of man defense early in this game, mm-hmm. and they did not try to spy Jalen Hurts early in this game. And, you know, he had the two long runs early. I think he had two rushes for 52 yards to start this game. And then I think at one point he had like six rushes for over 100 yards. Miles Sanders ran right through this. Boston Scott, Kenny Gainwell, when they got their opportunities, they all ran it well. But they played this man defense, and when you do that, you wind up the guys in coverage have their back turned to the quarterback, and it led to these really long runs by Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is going to take that if you just don't respect his running ability. And eventually they did kind of get away from that, and they played a little bit more zone defense, and the Eagles beat them through the air when they did that. So I think this game really showed the number of different ways that the Eagles offense can beat you when everything is clicking and going well. And they 40 burgered them. The defense was concerning because they gave up 33 points, of course.
We'll get to that.
the special teams put them in bad positions a number of times, and that's a big concern going forward as well. But obviously the big takeaway in this game was just how well they ran the ball. By the way, like, the Eagles were the number one rushing offense in the league last year, and when you look at their stats in each of the pertinent categories, when you compare last year versus this year is almost is better almost completely across the board. So you can arguably say that this year's rushing offense is better than last year's rushing offense. Now, they're not the number one rushing offense in the league this year because you have the Bears with Justin Fields and David Montgomery and Khalil Herbert, like, racking up rushing yards and not doing anything else either on defense or on offense. But, like, the Eagles, you know, it's, it can be argued that they have a better rushing offense this year than they did last year, except the difference is they now also have, for the most part, a good defense. They have A.J. Brown, and Jalen Hurts now knows how to throw the ball, which is kind of a big deal.
First Eagles quarterback to win NFC Offensive Player of the Week since Nick Foles in 2018.
He didn't have one already this year?
No, he won NFC Offensive Player of the Month for September.
Okay.
But he never won, like, the weekly award.
Oh.
Which is...
That's interesting, because he's had some big games.
He did. But there you go. Anyway... So dominant rushing performance. Got to give a lot of credit to Jeff Statlin, who is the run game coordinator for the highest single game total in 74 years. To him, to Jalen Hurts, who, you know, himself accounted for his rushing production, but by being that mobile threat, certainly opens things up for the running backs. You have to give credit to all the running backs, so I think pretty much maximized what they were given with. The offensive line was just blowing people off the ball, which is to be somewhat expected. I was talking to Justice Mosqueda from Acme Packing Company, the Packers SB Nation blog, and he was talking about how, you know, this defensive line, is just, there's so many, like, no-name players, especially with, like, Rashawn Gary hurt. So, you know, they did what it was to be expected, but they did it in dominant fashion. Hurts was awesome. And I think he's not really getting enough credit for his passing in this game, which certainly wasn't the spotlight thing, but he made some really good throws. In that back shoulder throw to Quez Watkins, that was a dime.
For sure.
And I thought maybe his most underrated throw of the game, he had that tight window throw, like, just over, he placed it just over the linebacker to connect with Devontae Smith. That was a 14-yard gain on the third and 12.
Oh, left side of the field, I think, near the sideline. Yeah.
And that was the Eagles... That ended up being that set up goal to go at the 5-yard line. The Eagles score there on their first possession of the second half. They take a 14-point lead. Like, that was a really big play that I think gets a little overlooked. I thought Jalen Hurts wasn't running because he had to. He ran because he could. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't like a crutch and he just had to do it. And his runs came in big spots. Like, 10 of his 17 rushes went for first downs. Like, he was moving, and like, just the first drive alone. Okay, it's 3rd and 10. Things kind of breaking down a little bit. Instead of going 3 and out, big run. Like, and not just for the first down. Like, a lot of quarterbacks might not even get the full 10 yards there. But if they do, they're going down. You know, they're sliding. They're done. Jalen Hurts has the vision to see the rest of the field and knows he can cut back and pick up 24 yards and basically put themselves at midfield at that point. So just like huge, like big high runs and high leverage critical spots to move the chains. He also, the Eagles were facing that 3rd and 6 on the Packers 38-yard line. That's when he broke the 28-yarder on that first drive to set up 1st and goal. So yeah, I just thought he made big plays and he set the tone. I'm a big set the tone guy, Jimmy. I feel like, you know, how you start doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you're not going to falter. Certainly the Eagles did. They got a 13-0. It looked like it was going to be a blowout and they didn't, but still I thought, like, okay, we're going to run on this Packers team. Like, Hurts set the tone for that. Like, we're going to run on them all game long. We're going to do it. I'm going to do it. The running backs are going to do it. It's what they did. And I want to give a lot of credit here to Miles Sanders, who I thought had his best game. And not just from a, like, obvious, like, okay, he set a career high in rushing. Just from a, like, tape aesthetic standpoint, like, watching him play anecdotally, he just looked, like, better than I've ever seen him, I feel like. He had 143 yards and 21 carries, 6.8 average. 2 touchdowns. By the way, he is 8 times this year. 8 touchdowns. Is that right? Or is he a 6?
That sounds about right.
He didn't do it a single time last year, but here's one I want to get to on Sanders that I thought was really impressive. Where, you know, usually he can kind of be frustrating, leaving some meat on the bone. I don't really think he did that at all here. He ran hard. He had 4.52 yards after contact per attempt per PFF. And to put that number in perspective, Tony Pollard leads the NFL in that category this year with 4.06. So he was way far out in front of what like the best running back in the NFL is doing that in that category this year. And he was elusive. He forced 6 total missed tackles in this game. And for perspective on that, Josh Jacobs and Nick Chubb, who are obviously like beast, they lead the league in forced missed tackles per game this season with like 5.8 and 5.6. So this was an elite running back kind of performance.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I thought that it would be actually a higher number than 6 because it felt like he was breaking tackles all night. All the more, like Boston Scott even had some broken tackles. Yep. Kenny Gainwell, maybe not necessarily breaking tackles, but pushing the pile like near the goal line on one play. And the offensive line opened up these gaping holes too. So he took advantage of those and he ran through arm tackles. And like you said, he ran with power. And he ran with elusiveness. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of a carryover of what we saw of him in training camp. Like in training camp, I thought he looked more explosive than he has, at least compared with the last 2 seasons. I thought he looked explosive in his rookie season in what was that? 2019. Yeah, 2019. You could tell right away that he was like their best back right away in 2019. And then like 2020 and 2021 were kind of disappointing. He did have some long runs in 2020, the really bad Eagles season. And we didn't see as much of that in 2021, but we're seeing him just become more of a, I wouldn't say a total complete back because we haven't seen him do much as a pass catcher. I don't think he has any drops this year. But
he also doesn't have a lot of targets.
They just haven't utilized him much in that kind of role, which is fine, whatever. Yeah. If he's running the ball this way, then who cares? But the other thing, too, is, no. Again, for the Eagles' sake, I'll knock on wood here, no fumbles. And he's done a great job with ball security, which has been sort of a concern of his over his career. So, yeah, I mean, 5 stars for Miles Sanders in this game, no doubt.
A.J. Brown, you know. Second fumble in 2 games, which is crazy because he hasn't had any since like midway through 2020, I believe. So yeah. Some of that's uncharacteristic. I know you thought last week's was more of kind of like a good play by the defense and this one was just a bad play by him. But it's like, you know, knowing what he kind of went through last week in terms of he said he lost 7 pounds. You saw his bloodshot eye, which I don't want to see any more pictures of, by the way. It's pretty gross. Like, I don't need to see that. I mean, I feel bad for him. I'm not trying to say hide it, but I'm saying like, I don't need to keep people keep like tweeting pictures. I don't need to see it anymore. It's kind of like disgusting. And it's also not even just like the actual looking at it, but like the story behind it of he was puking so hard that his eye got bloodshot. Like that sounds terrible. I kind of cut him some slack. I'm not going to crush him. I mean, it was obviously a really bad fumble, but I think, you know, if we're talking big picture, like concern level with him is extremely low. I think he'll be fine. You know, hopefully he can bounce back this week and you know, get some rest and not be throwing up all week. But obviously not a big game for the receivers just because the run was the big story. Anything else on the offense here before we flip to the defense?
Yeah, I will say on A.J. Brown, there are going to be defenders coming at that now. When you put some blood in the water, you know, sharks are gonna show up. So that's, I mean, I think it is a concern going forward because they are going to try to be ripping the ball out for him when he's trying to, you know, fight for that extra yardage or whatever. And I want him fighting for that extra yardage because that's what makes him the player that he is.
Well, sometimes
maybe not necessarily when there's 3 guys trying to bring him down.
When
maybe
it's like at that point, just go down. And it's a screen. You're clearly done. It's like maybe just get the field goal. Yeah.
Right. One other thing on offense is I think Quez Watkins deserves a quick note here.
Sure.
He had a touchdown in this game, had a big play.
He got a game ball
in the last
too.
Game as well. You did mention the back shoulder throw to him, but I also thought that he did a great job.
Yes.
I mean, that was a great throw by Jalen Hurts, but he did a great job on that play as well.
His speed back for that. Creates that opportunity. Like his ability to beat the teams over the top like allows for that to happen. Yeah.
That was on Rasul Douglas, and I think Rasul Douglas was overcompensating for his speed, making sure he got down the field and beat him to the spot and left himself susceptible to that back shoulder throw. So, I think that I think Nick Sirianni, by the way, was extremely happy to get Quez Watkins involved because Quez Watkins has sort of accepted the role that he's been put in this year after they acquired A.J. Brown. After they acquired A.J. Brown, it was, you know, he went from a starter to not even just the third receiver, but the fourth guy in the pecking order behind the two, behind Brown and Devontae Smith and Dallas Goedert, of course. With Goedert out, they need him to step up. And, you know, he had the fumble against the Commanders, but he also had four catches for 80 yards in that game and got open deep down the field and made a play before he did fumble. And he's had two touchdowns in each of the last two games. So, you know, good on Quez for contributing in a way where in these games where they've needed him to step up.
Yeah, and the Eagles played a lot more 11 personnel in this game than they did. So last week, you know, it was just befuddling how much 13 and 12 they were playing early on when you don't have Goddard. You have multiple three right. backup tight ends and you have to get them on the field. You can't get Quez Morin. So I think they've adjusted since then. That's another key thing for me in this game is like a big picture takeaway. I kept saying that, like, I thought last week against the Colts was such an uncharacteristically bad performance from Sirianni and Steichen. And I think they've adjusted since then. And I think that's borne out that it's not a huge concern moving forward as much as it was a blip on the radar one bad week. I think that's all I had on the offense. Are you ready to talk about defense?
Sure. Let's hit it.
So I see a lot of like, well, you can't blame Jonathan Gannon too much because the Eagles gave up some short fields. And that is true. But, Jimmy, entering week 12, the Packers' highest offensive score on the road was 17 points. He was allowed 33 points. They let him to double that production. It was the Packers' best scoring output of the season. So I'm not going to totally forgive Jonathan Gannon and say the defense is fine after that. Like, that's not good enough. If you look at the Packers' four touchdown drives. Okay, so the first one, they started at their own 41-yard line after a long kick return. But like, okay, it's still on their own side of the field. It's not like they have to get a touchdown because they start there. Second touchdown drive is at the Eagles' 37-yard line. That was after the turnover on downs, which I don't begrudge Sirianni going for at all. And I thought Hurts kind of got it. I thought he got the line to gain on the third down, not so on the fourth down where he fumbled. It was a bad or botched snap. It's kind of fluky. Third touchdown, that started at the Eagles' 12-yard line after A.J. Brown's fumble. Okay, that's kind of tough when you're in that spot. The fourth one was when they started at their own 25, but the backup quarterback, Jordan Love, was in the game. To me, I don't really think it's unreasonable to ask Gannon to maybe and the defense to get like a field goal on one of those four drives, you know, because and 4 points would be a big difference in this game in terms of a cushion. So I don't want to hear that like you can't really blame Gannon too much. Like, no, I'm not saying he was a disaster, but like, you know, I think this is not my winners, losers, and I don't know column. I put him in the I don't know section because I don't know that he really did the best what he could have reasonably done.
Yeah, so it's the first time they've given up more than 21 points since week one. So maybe this is just a blip like it was offensively for the Colts last week. That's the sort of the glass half full approach. And then also, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, he was partly the defensive scheme on the Reed Blankenship interception had a lot to do with them making that big play. They did force the two turnovers. The other one, Slay, did a nice job of Fran showed the scheme on that play. I wasn't paying attention quite as closely on that as I was Reed Blankenship because I wrote a Reed Blankenship article like using that. I do think that there were some good things that Gannon did in that game.
Sure.
But certainly you don't want to be giving up 33 points no matter what kind of position either the offense or the special teams are putting you in. Granted, it's Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers hasn't had the best season, but he's still Aaron Rodgers.
It was Rodgers, but then Jordan Love, too. Jordan Love also led a touchdown drive. Yeah.
And then I think the concern on the run defense is still there. Like, A.J. Dillon had 8 carries for 65 yards and a touchdown.
Why were they not running him on every play? Literally run him on every single play until the Eagles can prove they can stop it.
Yeah, they're having success with that. And I guess they got away from it because they had a deficit. But it was weird because whenever he got the ball, he was doing stuff with it. And when you look at like what he is, he's 6 foot, 247 pounds. Yep. He's a big – he looks like LeGarrette Blount to me, like his body type. And then you go from him this week to A.J. Derek – I almost – A.J. to Derek Henry in week 13.
Yeah.
They're similar in that they're big. They're both big and physical. But to compare A.J. Dillon and Derrick Henry is like comparing Boston Scott to Darren Sproles in his prime. Like they're similar in some ways, but there's just no comparison. So I think, you know, they kind of got – I think that, you know, and after that first Colts drive where Jonathan Taylor had 7 carries for 49 yards and a touchdown, the rest of that game, they shut down the Colts run. And I think they, you know, made people feel okay about their run defense again. But they kind of relapsed a little bit here against the Packers because the Packers were running the ball very effectively when they did. They just didn't do enough of it. I don't know why that wasn't a bigger part of their game. That's how they beat the Cowboys a few weeks ago, by the way. They just kept running it all day with Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. I don't know why they got away from it. That was stupid on their part, in my opinion. But yeah, I think that's a concern that has now crept back in after a solid performance against Indy.
I just feel like sometimes this Eagles defense, especially against the run, looks like, I'm trying to think of the reference, but it looks like they're like, you know, this cartoon version of, you know, like a big man running the football. And then like these peewee little kids trying to like tap. It's like, they're not big enough. They can't like get them down. You need to like get 5 bodies on a guy to like even have a chance. Just very soft. It's like, even, I don't even think it's about, you know, having amazing holes to work with all the time. I think it's, you know, the contact can start, you know, maybe like 2 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. And, you know, with a good, like, forceful tackle, you get the guy down. It's a 2-yard gain. But here, it's like the runner's able to power, like, fall forward, like, kind of like some of the better runners in the league do, like Jordan Howard, you know, used to do. Even if he'd get contacted, he'd still always kind of get positive yardage. Zeke, and especially in his prime, always really good at doing that. But it just feels like some of these backs against the Eagles, yeah, it's just like they can't get a good stop on him. It's just like,
mostly against those 4-man fronts too.
Yeah.
So all the more reason to try Jordan Davis in some of those 4-man fronts, you know, to help with stopping the run when you do want to run those. I mean, there are big holes. Like there was one in particular I remember, like Ndamukong Suh was sort of took like a wide angle and seemed almost like he was just rushing the passer when it was a run play, and then opened up a big hole that they ran through. So yeah, it is still a concern going forward. And then special teams, man.
Oh, like, my gosh.
They had the, three big kick returns.
It's always something, though. It's always something.
Yeah. Yeah, from week to week, there's like a new – I think the kick return – the kick coverage team has been bad for the most part this season, consistently bad, whereas – you can look at almost every game this season, probably every game, and pick out one pretty big special teams theme in that game, whether it's, you know, blocked field goal or, you know, them converting a fake punt or, you know, big return or, and then of course the other consistent thing, by the way, is they have no return game at all. Like they're just wholly unthreatening on kick returns and punt returns. Mm-hmm. If you're an Eagles fan, you're just hoping that they don't fumble and you're like, you're happy with that. But like, yeah, certainly they are. And this is not a good Packers special teams group, by the way. I think heading into this game, they're 26th or something like that in special teams DVOA. Their kick returner is good. So Keyshawn Nixon is a good returner.
Yeah.
But... And they felt, and so like, Jake Elliott was kicking him like 6-7 yards deep in the end zone. They're taking it out anyway because they know it's a weakness of the Eagles.
Yep. I mean, like, he might be a good returner, but their unit as a whole was only averaging 20.8 yards per kick return this year. Like, that's 10th worst in the NFL. Like, this is not an amazing kick return unit. It's not Devin Hester back there. Like, come on. Like, who was allowing these big returns in the NFL? Kick returns. That's like, kick returns aren't even a thing anymore. And the Eagles aren't allowing it. They allowed a 38 yarder, 52, and a 53. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. And like, it came at a big moment. The first one, the 38 yarder, because the Eagles go up and then it's not just, and Jake Elliott made a 54 yard field goal, you know, for the Eagles to go up 10 points. It's kind of, we probably take for granted how clutch of a kicker he is in some of these spots. But like, that missed extra point combined with the special teams unit allowing a 38-yard return, like, the Eagles should have been – it looked like it was going to be a rout at that point, you know? If Elliott makes that field goal, they're up 14-0, and then ideally you get a touchback, and then now they have to drive 75 yards down the field, where instead I thought, like, that changed the vibe of the game. Like, maybe that's not the case, and maybe the Packers still score a touchdown even if it is a touchback and it's at the 25. But, like, I just think that's a total change in the vibe. We saw that against the Cowboys when Kevontae Turpin –
right?
You know, like is able to have that long return. I think it kind of it gives the offense some juice. They're like, oh, look, we have a short field to work with. We got this, guys. Don't worry about it.
They got points at the end of the first half. Yeah. As a result of that,
and that kind
of
like, and that's like, okay, we got some points on the board. We're feeling like that. That I think that was all very real. Whereas you know, if they have to start at their 25, it could be a whole different scenario where it's like, oh, we have to drive the whole field now. It's like it changes the feeling of the game. So, yeah, I think that was a big deal. And I don't think the Eagles are going to fire Michael Clay, to be clear, during the season. But it's like, this could be pretty costly. It's like you're kind of just, you know, something's going to go wrong every single week. You're just like waiting for the bad thing to happen on special teams. And I don't know what you can do. I guess they're going to try to tweak some things. Michael Clay himself said, you know, he brought up the definition of insanity quote. I don't know how much you can do. I wonder, you know, and this is something we didn't talk about last week. The Eagles brought on Marcus Brady, the Colts former Nick Sirianni's replacement in Indianapolis, as the Colts offensive coordinator and previously their quarterbacks coach. I don't know if there's like a veteran special teams coordinator assistant. What's Bobby April up to? No, not him. But like, is there something you can do? Like, what would you do?
It's hard to bring in a different coordinator this late in the season, but.
Well, not like a different coordinator, but like a
right. Somebody to help out. Yeah.
Because, and I think that's relevant because when the Eagles hired Michael Clay, he was literally the youngest coordinator in the NFL. I think it's fair to wonder if he has like the you know, if he's the most qualified candidate based on experience. I think it could be a little bit helpful to get someone experienced in here.
He's had his moments too. I don't want to completely crap on the guy. Like they were ready on the onside kick. What was that, week one?
That's fine.
Was ready for that. All right. Yeah. I don't want to give it to you. And, you know, they had a nice scheme drawn. We're going back a year here on this one, but they had a nice scheme drawn up on the blocked punt against the Panthers, which basically won them that game. But again, we're going back. We're reaching now.
It's a net negative.
But yeah, I mean, clearly it's you look at like the three phases: offense, awesome, defense, potential to be awesome. Stats are great, nitpicks here and there, but overall very good. Special teams, very bad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously that's the one you'd pick to be very bad if you had your choice. But they've been lucky not to lose any games as a result of, you know, a bad special teams play or bad special teams play in general. And you certainly don't want your season to end in the playoffs because of some crazy special teams play.
No one would be surprised if that happened, right? It'd be like, yep, that was
we knew that was going to happen. Yep.
So like, it's tough for me to reconcile, like just being fine with that. I know people will talk about like, okay, yeah, you don't want to invest resources here. If you're going to have to sacrifice, I get that. But like, to me, the status quo is not good enough. You can't just sit back and continue to watch this. You have to do something. Something has to be changed. I don't know if it's a personnel thing, if you need to kind of like maybe there's someone you can sign to the practice squad who can, you know, test out with these elevations and see if like that player can make a difference. There has to be something they can do. I don't think sitting on your hands and saying, oh, this will be fine is a valid strategy. They have to tweak some things.
All right. Why don't we take another break here, and then we'll come back and we'll do Eagles Titans preview, and we'll get to our picks. But before we do that, if you're looking to buy or sell your home, call Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors, 856-906-9295. Again, that's 856-906-9295. Voted on by God as the greatest realtor in the history of the universe. That's Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors, 856-906-9295. Brandon?
I feel like you're kind of giving me the voice of who was that little green guy in Flintstones? The Great Gazoo.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You're giving me a Great Gazoo voice there.
That's an old reference for you don't get any old references at all, and you hit me with Great Gazoo? Look at you.
I feel like that was on Cartoon Network and stuff, Flintstones. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Saturday morning cartoons, maybe, when I was young. Maybe not.
They still had those when you were a kid?
Something like that. I don't know. It's been
because they had them like that. That was like a big thing Saturday morning when I was a kid way back in the day.
Yeah, we still had them. Okay. I don't know if that was on
and wrestling was on. Yeah. Like noon or something. Maybe it was
on a Saturday.
Might have even been the morning. Yeah, I think it was Saturday, right?
I don't know.
I mean, so this was like the wrestling. This wasn't like, you know, a big event. This is when you get like the jobbers.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, anyway, where it'd be like, I don't know, like Big John Studd against Barry O. And Big John Studd would just wipe the floor with Barry O, you know?
All right. Back after this.
Kristen Rocha, Roach Realtors, Roach Realtors, Roach Realtors. Kristen Rocha, Roach Realtors.
She's the greatest.
856-906-9295.
856-906-9295.
Back here on BGN Radio, time to talk some Eagles Titans, a pretty interesting matchup for like a 1 o'clock game. You know, team that's what, 8-3 versus a team that's 10-1,
7-4 they are.
7-4, sorry, they're 8-3 against the spread. Why don't you? So you did your matchup column. Why don't you guide us through your thoughts on the Titans?
Yeah, I mean it's a run game on both sides of the ball because it's strength on strength when the Eagles have when the Eagles have the ball with their run game. Titans are sorry, I don't have it pulled up here, but they're a very good run defense. Everyone sort of recognizes the Titans as like this tough, physical, grimy kind of team overall, and then certainly their defense, and that trickles down basically from their head coach Mike Vrabel, who Nick Sirianni spoke at length about how how much respect that he has for them. But the Titans are allowing 84. Rushing yards per game, that's third in the NFL. They are allowing 0.3 touchdowns per game. I think they've given up 2 rushing touchdowns on the season, which is best in the NFL. They're allowing 3.9 rushing yards per attempt, which is second in the NFL. They're very good. And up front, you have guys like Jeffrey Simmons, who, in my opinion, is basically like Fletcher Cox in his prime. You have Denico Autry, who actually missed the game last Sunday against the Bengals. He's got 7 sacks and he's a big defensive end at like 6'5", 285. So he's a guy that is good both against the run and the pass. He has inside outside versatility. He's a guy worth watching this week in terms of whether he'll be available or not. And then the other guy, I know this is like a Ben Solak favorite, is David Long, the linebacker, who is awesome. Like if you watch this guy, just like he runs raids everywhere. He's just everywhere against the run and against the pass. He's got 85 tackles this year, a couple interceptions, bunch of pass breakups. That guy's probably going to be in the Pro Bowl this year, David Long. But they have a very good run defense. Corners are a little suspect. They've actually invested heavily at that position in the draft the last 3 years. They took Christian Fulton with the 35th overall pick in 2020. They took Caleb Farley in the first round. 22nd overall in 2021. They also took Elijah Molden that year in the third round. This year, they took Roger McCreary, who a lot of people were rejecting as a first-round pick. He went in the second round, 35th overall. So they have four. Those are their top 4 corners. Farley's done for the year with a herniated disc. So their starters are Fulton, Molden, and McCreary. And the guy that's been attacked the most of that group is, so far this year has been McCreary, who, according to ProFootballReference.com, has been targeted 71 times this year, which is a lot. He's given up 49 receptions, 552 yards, 4 touchdowns, opposing passer rating of 104.9. Then the other guy that I think is susceptible is Elijah Molden, who is their slot corner. He missed, I believe, the first – he's only played in 2 games. So he missed the first, I don't know, like 9 or 10 games of the season on injured reserve with a groin injury. And he came back and played 1 game, and he missed the next game with that groin injury. And then he came back last week and he played sparingly. So that's a guy that I think if he plays, you attack him. You attack him and McCreary. Those are the two guys that you want to attack in the passing game. But again, it's strength on strength in terms of the Eagles' run offense versus the Titans' run defense. And then the obvious, the really obvious matchup on the other side of the ball is the Eagles' suspect run defense against Derrick Henry. I don't think really much needs to be said about that, that we didn't already say with, their struggles against A.J. Dillon last week and guys like Damian Pierce and the first series against the Colts with Jonathan Taylor and the way that the Commanders were able to stay on schedule with Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be probably their biggest challenge of the year in terms of stopping Derrick Henry. And it's probably going to be their most challenging front 7 that they're going to face this year from an offensive perspective.
a lot to respond to there. But I think the Henry thing goes without saying. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know what you do, really. I mean, what do you do? Like, you just have to not tackle as badly as you always do, basically. I don't know. If you don't have an answer for A.J. Dillon, I don't know what you're going to do against Derrick Henry when the Titans should just be looking to basically run the ball every play until, again, the Eagles can prove they can stop that. So certainly they'll be tested in that regard. I will say that the Titans defense as a whole, just looking at from zooming out a little bit, they've not allowed more than 20 points in a game since their week 6 bye. I like to point out how Jim Schwartz is on their staff. And by the way, the 2 points they did allow, 2 games they did allow 20 points, Patrick Mahomes in overtime. And Joe Burrow. So, like, two MVP kind of people in the MVP conversation. So, and obviously the Eagles have one of those guys for themselves. But the point being, Stevens is really good, and the worst games have come against, like, really good quarterbacks. So that's certainly, it's going to be a tough matchup. On the flip side, they've not scored more than 20 points. They did have 27 points against the Packers, of course. But they've scored more than 20 points in just one game since that week 6 bye. So, for as much as the offense is intimidating from the Derrick Henry standpoint, it's not like a juggernaut kind of unit. Ryan Tannehill isn't really like terrifying you. He can have a big game and he can be efficient, but he's not, going to torch the secondary all day and making plays, I think. On the defense, by the way, Titans defense, you mentioned, the cornerbacks, and I certainly think, yes, that's an area to attack. You have McCreary. I did the math on that. I think you said 71 targets per game on the season. So that's 6.5 per game. So teams are really just throwing at him. They've allowed the second most fantasy football points to wide receivers this season of any defense. Okay. Yeah. So certainly would be a prime opportunity for an AJ Brown revenge game. And he's really going to want that, by the way. I mean, that should be obvious, I feel like, to anyone who's on Twitter, but if you're not, AJ Brown was like clowning on the Titans as recently as when they only completed 5 passes against the Chiefs and was, talking about how they miss him. Now, your boy Treylon Burks has been coming on recently. But I mean, still no AJ Brown. I do think AJ Brown's really going to want this. And I don't know that that's necessarily a good thing. Like, cause I think it can be in terms of motivated to have a huge game. He wants to go out and get this. He's going to do everything he can. But it also could be a Nick Sirianni versus the Colts situation where, like, he's trying too hard. He's trying to do a little too much, I think. And he's kind of, he's pressing and he's forcing the issue a bit. And he might be in his own head because he's like, oh, I need to make this play. I need to make this play.
Got to make AJ happy.
Yeah. So, and also, and then from the coaching standpoint, maybe, forcing it a bit too much. So I don't think that's only an edge. It could be an edge, but I think it's a double-edged sword, could cut both ways. I do think it's a little funny how people are talking about this team as scary. And I get it from a standpoint of, I talked about this on the mixtape, Vrabel has the best record in the NFL since 2018. Straight up, the Titans do, I should say, as underdogs. They're 22-16. That's pretty good as underdogs to be straight up and above 66 games above 500. So he's kind of like the new Mike Tomlin in that category. Tomlin's always really good against the spread and straight up as Steelers are as underdogs. So there's definitely some of that there. I get that. It's going to be a dogfight. At the same time, to me, if you look at the Titans schedule this year, can you really tell me like the impressive win on that schedule, like the one that really sticks out as like, oh wow, that was a really good one? I don't think they have that. Now they played the Chiefs tough in overtime despite having Malik Willis, so I'm not saying again they're scrubs, but like they don't have a win this year that you look at and you're like, well, that was a really good win. I think the best thing you can say is like the Packers on Thursday Night Football, who the Eagles just beat and haven't really looked great this year. They beat the Commanders, but that was when Carson Wentz was starting earlier this year. So
the one really good opponent that they played was Buffalo week 2.
Yeah.
They lost 41-7.
Yeah. So I do
got
think
their asses handed to them by Buffalo. I will say though, last year they were beating a ton of good teams. So they beat
the Bills,
and this is all in a very small stretch.
The Rams.
They beat Buffalo, Kansas City, the Colts, who were still good then, and the Rams, who of course were the Super Bowl champions. That was all in. That was a 4-game stretch. They won 4 straight games against the Bills, Chiefs, Colts, and Rams. That's really impressive. But I'm with you here. Certainly, like they haven't beaten anyone very impressive in 2022.
Yeah. So again, I think they're tough, but it's not like this team is not unbeatable.
They just hang around. Yeah. Aforementioned Bills game aside, they're just a team that hangs around.
Yep.
You look at the roster and it's not super talented. Like they have star players like Jeffrey Simmons and Derrick Henry. And I guess those are the two main ones, but you look at it and you go, okay, well there's holes there and there's holes there and there's holes there, mm-hmm. but they just hang around and they win a lot of games. They're the one seed.
Yeah.
They were the one seed in the AFC last year. And they are going to cruise to a repeat championship in the, you know, obviously the horrible AFC South. But you know, they are going to dominate that division. It's a weird team in that it's hard to, you know, see why they win as many games as they do. But I mean, you watch them play and they are just tough and physical and like they beat up on, mm-hmm. like, I wonder what I'm a little mad at myself for not researching this before the podcast, but I wonder what the records of teams are after they play them like the next week, because like you do kind of go through a tough battle every time you face a team like this.
So they lost to the Bills, you know, in a big way. They opened the season with a loss and then they narrowly beat the Raiders. That game came down like to the wire. I think it was like they were in the end zone, had to make a play. Mm-hmm. And then
lost to the Giants week one on a missed field goal.
Okay. So narrow loss. After that, they lost to the Chiefs. I was obviously in overtime. They beat the Titans or sorry, they beat the Broncos after that, who are just, you know, terrible, disastrous team. And then, so I don't know.
Their most impressive game of the year this year was against Kansas City because
was
that the game where they only threw 5 passes?
He threw 16, but he completed 5.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't think anywhere they
got that team to overtime. Like, yeah. It's crazy that game went to overtime against who most people think is the best team in the NFL.
I think the Titans, their identity, they are very much like a team coached by a former NFL linebacker from his time period. Like, that's exactly the team they are. Like, they're tough. They're gritty. It's not pretty, but they're just going to grind it out. They're going to wear you down. They're going to make you play to their level, I guess is kind of what they do for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even some of the worst teams. They're not like necessarily beating the crap out of some of these bad teams. Like they beat the Texans by a touchdown, beat the Broncos by a touchdown, beat the Colts by 19 points. They beat the Commanders with Wentz at the time by 4 points. Like they're not like, and they beat the Colts again earlier by 7. Like they're not crushing these bad teams.
Right.
So even against those teams, it's still kind of a slog fest. You're grinding it out. But so it doesn't matter. It's like it's opponent agnostic. Whether it's a good team, bad team, they're just kind of, you're in a dogfight. It's going to be tough. It's going to be physical. So it's nice. I think this is a good test for the Eagles. They need this kind of matchup, I think, on their schedule to kind of like, you know, let's see it. You know, this is kind of like, it's been a while since they've gone into a game really where you're like, wow, this is going to be a tough one for the Eagles. I mean, they've been, they were like double digit favorites for a while there, including the Washington game, which they lost. And since the past couple of weeks, you know, you're, maybe they've had some struggles, but you're like, okay, they're going to beat the Colts. They're probably going to beat the Packers. The Titans are like, not so sure.
Okay.
Anything else on this matchup?
No, I think that's pretty much it. I guess I like to take a look at the opposing team's offensive line too. And it's kind of low key problematic for them. Like, they lost Taylor Lewan to a torn ACL, I think week 2. And Dennis Daly has filled in for him. Pro Football Focus has him down for 6 sacks allowed this year. Dennis Daly.
So they went from Dennis Kelly to Dennis Daly.
That's right. So he has been a problem area for them at left tackle. Of course, if you're the Eagles, you have to earn the right to rush the passer by stopping the run first and getting them in long downs and distances on third down. And then you can take advantage of a guy like that. And then at right tackle, Nicholas Petit-Frere from Ohio State, he's a rookie third round pick for them. He's been up and down, but I think those are the two, like, their offensive tackles. They can attack them on the edge. And I think this could be a game where Brandon Graham and Josh Sweat and Hassan Reddick take advantage of that. I think we've just kind of stopped mentioning Robert Quinn at this point. It's like maybe he can get out. Maybe he can do something in this game.
Ryan Kerrigan
against one of those 2.0. Two guys, but yeah, pretty much. But well, you know, at least they'll have to play him because they do have other guys. But yeah, they that's the area that I think they can attack if they are able to slow down the Titans' run game.
I wasn't sure if you said this already because I wanted to check Twitter real quick because we're recording on Wednesday morning and, you know, you got some stuff going on, trying to keep an eye on the news. But this is kind of like they need Jim Schwartz for this game. The Eagles need the Jim Schwartz approach, right, to what you were just talking yes. about. They need to stop the run and earn the right to rush the passer. That's what they need to do, I think, to beat this Titans team. They need to shut down the run. And once they do that, they'll get opportunities to sack Ryan Tannehill and force him into turnovers or, you know, or, you know, rack up sacks on him, whatever. I think that's kind of the game plan. But I mean, the ideal game plan, we'll see, is the actual game plan. Anything else? Are you good?
No, I think we can get to the picks.
Well, we'll take a break here, but we're not going to do a sponsor read because we already did the first two. So there's multiple. What about,
we didn't do Righteous Felon, or did we?
We did. And we did Christian Roach. So we'll just say them real quickly again. RighteousFelon.com, discount code BGN15 for 15% off, and Christian Roach of Roach Realtors and RoachRealtors.com. Jimmy.
Back after this.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Back here on BGN Radio, Bleeding Green Nation Radio. Jimmy, it's time yes. for our NFL picks against the spread, but not before I tease the same game parlay from DraftKings, which did not hit last week. I had Miles Sanders over on like rushing yards and Eagles money line, so those did. But I had Packers under 17.5 points. And to me, that's not a bad thing because they had never scored more than that this year. I blame Jonathan Gannon, obviously special teams and the turnovers as well, for not living up to their end of the bargain. So we'll see if I can get it right this week. The, you know, as we're recording this, they're not the, you know, same year in parlay options are not up yet. So that's why I do not have it for you. But you can check out the Bleeding Green Nation Twitter account at Bleeding Green. To see that when that goes live on game day. Every week this season, we'll be cooking up our own same game parlay that our good friends at DraftKings will put right on their homepage. You'll even see the BGN logo. It'll be called the Bleeding Green Nation same game parlay. For all of you, our loyal fans, to follow, be sure to check out our Twitter once again at Bleeding Green to see the graphic promoting the same game parlay you can wager on. And then each week, DraftKings has new offers and great ways to make your Sunday more fun. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Jimmy, you are 23-22-1 against the spread.
I improved last week because on my written version, I think I was 1-6.
And then I am 25-20-1. We both went 2-1-1 last week.
Okay.
You got me with the edge you had over me was because we didn't pick them all the same. Was the Falcons. Not covering, the Commanders covering the spread.
Mm-hmm, right.
The Falcons covering, which they should have. They were right there at the end of the game. They should have won the game, but whatever. And then I took the Giants, who had certainly a big backdoor cover, but we're also, I think, deserving of that backdoor cover a little bit because they totally got screwed on their first touchdown that got wiped off the board for total BS penalty.
Right on Thanksgiving. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Unless you ask Joe Banner. We are also 9-2 straight up when picking the Eagles this year. Okay.
I'm going in totally fresh. I have not looked at a line yet this week. This is going to be a rough one for me, I think.
We have four games to talk about. We're going to start with a really big game in terms of the Saints draft pick implications. So the Saints are bad. They're 4-8, but they are certainly not out of the playoff picture because the NFC South is open because the Bucs refused to seize it. Really bad loss by the Bucs to the Browns. The Bucs are 3.5-point favorites at home. It's on Monday Night Football, so it's a primetime game that everyone will get to watch. Bucs need to win this game. They need to shut the door on the Saints and have that tiebreaker. Because if they win, the Bucs have the head-to-head tiebreaker over New Orleans. And I don't think the Saints are primed to go on a run, but they could by virtue of no one else, again, seizing that division. So it makes me nervous. If you're an Eagles fan, you need to be rooting for the Bucs to win this game and snuff out the Saints' hopes of being able to win this division. So I will take the Bucs 3.5 to cover.
This is where? This is in Tampa?
It's in Tampa.
Okay. So just to expand on your point there, 538.com has the Saints at 8% likely to make the playoffs.
Right now, yeah.
If they win this game, it pops up to 24%, 25%. If they lose this game, it's under 1%.
must-lose game from the Eagles' perspective.
Yeah. And if they lose it, if they do lose it, they're done. Like, I mean, you can forget about them. Like, the Eagles all but clinch a top 18 pick from that pick.
Yep.
3.5 is a low line, man. I guess Vegas liking the what Bucks they don't see look good. Neither do the Saints. The Saints got shut out against they played the 49ers this past week. Actually, if you have the opportunity, go to YouTube or not YouTube, go to Sheil Kapadia's Twitter page and listen to his Tampa Bay Buccaneers rant.
I saw that.
It was very entertaining. He went off on them for like 10 minutes.
They stink.
And how and not even stink, but also like their coaching decisions in the game against who did they play?
The Browns with
the Browns.
Oh, right. Without Deshaun Watson. Yeah.
So that's worth your time, I think.
Todd Bowles might be a better defensive coordinator than head coach.
Yeah, I think so. I'll take the Bucs too, because the Saints are just worse, in my opinion. And 3.5, that's not a whole lot to lay. So yeah, I'll take the Bucs minus 3.5.
All right. The Commanders, this is such a weird thing on the schedule. The Commanders play the Giants this week. They have their bye next week. And then they play the Giants again. So they're playing the Giants in back-to-back games, not back-to-back weeks, but back-to-back games. Commanders are 2.5-point favorites at MetLife Stadium. I'm going to take the Commanders. Their vibes are much better than the Giants right now. I think the Giants are just so banged up. It's like, what, 7 or 8 starters missing to injury? Also, I think regression has been coming for them. Daniel Jones, I feel like been patient with Daniel Jones. Like I've seen enough there over the course of time, not to like believe in him, but not I did not want to be totally out on him. But after some of those throws in that Cowboys game where like they were gotta have it conversions, and he was just like, there's no pressure, and he's throwing to an open target in the flat. And like throwing behind Saquon, and like he's just making like egregiously awful throws on like 4-yard outs. I'm like, what is this? This is terrible. So I feel like I'm very much more than ever like leaning out on him, and I just don't trust the Giants at this point. I think the Commanders have something. The Commanders have found their identity. I talked about that with RJ. It's ball control offense. It's a solid defense. The Giants don't really have enough going for them right now. I will take the Commanders to cover 2.5.
Yeah, I'm with you there. The Giants, you mentioned them being banged up. They're missing, on Thanksgiving anyway, they're missing 4 starting offensive linemen. They're missing both of their starting corners. Their wide receivers have been banged up all year, but they're without Sterling Shepard, Colin Johnson. They traded Kadarius Toney. I'm missing some. Oh, the rookie Wando Robinson is done for the year. So, yeah, I mean, we already kind of looked at them as a fraud kind of team, at least relative to what their record was. But now they're also really banged up. I think they're one of the worst teams in the NFL right now. And they'll get some of those guys back. Like Evan Neal, I know, is returning to the lineup. And I don't know if they'll get one of those corners back or whatever. But yeah, I'm with you. I think the Commanders are playing well right now. They've won like what, 6 of the last 7 games, I think.
Yep.
So yeah, they're playing well, and they would not be playing this way, by the way, if Carson Wentz were still in there.
Like,
he'd be checking out of run plays and like.
I want to take a little victory lap here on Heinicke, by the way, because I think you said that he just stunk, and I don't think that was fair. Yeah. I said he gives you a puncher's chance every single game, like pretty much for the most part. Maybe unless you're playing like the Chiefs or whatever, you go into the game not necessarily as a favorite, that's not guaranteed to win, but like there is a path to victory
that's fair.
Contrast.
I'll take my lumps on that one.
With Carson Wentz, there are times where you're just like, there's no chance. There's no path to winning. He's going to make mistakes, and you're going to lose. Anyway.
Yeah, he would not be happy playing ball control offense.
No.
But anyway, yeah, I like what the Commanders are doing. And they're not a threat in the playoffs or anything like that, but they're probably going to make the playoffs. I don't think at this point, I would say that the Giants are – I don't want to call them a long shot to make the playoffs, but – I would say they're a lot more likely to miss the playoffs than make it with the way they're playing. And they actually have the hardest schedule, according to Tankathon, down the stretch of the season. So they're in trouble. Their playoff hopes. And by the way, if they don't make the playoffs, then they will have won all these games and wrecked their draft position. And they'll have to make a choice on whether or not to franchise tag Daniel Jones. And if they don't, also Saquon too. And then if they don't, I feel like they've run Saquon so much this year that they don't plan on bringing him back, or else they would have tried to conserve him a little bit more. Maybe who knows? The point here is like they will have won a lot of games and they'll have a pick in like the late teens, so like they won't be in a position to draft a quarterback either. And that's about as bad of a season as they probably could have asked for. I mean, you're happy if you're a Giants fan to actually see some wins, but it's going to come at the cost of adding a guy who can actually lead the team at quarterback.
I think someone's gonna have to answer for that too, is how I put it to RJ. Like, if they fall out of the playoffs, someone has to like eat that, right? Like, they're not gonna, you can't just bring everyone back, and you're not gonna touch the coaching staff probably. And I think it's probably Daniel Jones. And
you're not gonna touch the GM because he's more or less done a pretty good job.
But
you know?
Someone has, there's no way you could just like bring everyone back after that. Like, that someone's gonna have to answer for that. It's not the same level of Carson Wentz and Irsay last year, but I think the owner is going to want to hold someone accountable, and I think it's going to be Daniel Jones at that point, if that's the case. If the Giants fall out, I think they're going to have to do something. I said the Jimmy G-men is what the Giants might be next year. maybe they can get Garoppolo.
That'd be funny.
Would be a good pickup for them. They can win with him.
Sure.
So last thing on Saquon. Last 6 games, because you mentioned his high usage, I think it's been taking a toll because he only has 3.6 yards per carry and 4.7 yards per reception. And his longest run is 27 yards. It came against the Texans, who are the worst team in the league.
Yeah.
And his longest reception is 12 yards. So he clearly just is not able to power that offense right now. And part of it probably...
Eagles are fortunate to get them when they're going to get him this year.
That is true. And also part of it is like, you know, when the receiving options are as bad as they are right now, like, you know, the defense can kind of key in a little bit more on Saquon than they would otherwise. So I think that's part of it. But the Commanders are also very good at stopping the run. So that's certainly not a good recipe for the Giants. I'm thinking about...
By the way... They flexed the Dolphins Chargers game, I think it was.
Yep.
Week 14, which
in California.
Boom! Did not want to have the Eagles Giants game flexed to Sunday Night Football. I'm very thankful to the football gods for keeping that as a 1 o'clock game.
I think the Giants.
That drive from North Jersey back to the Philly area at 3 a.m. Dude, that sucks after like covering a game all night and being up all day. Like that drive is not fun. So thank you, football gods, for not putting that on me.
I think you can thank the Giants too. I think them losing their last 2 games has given the like vibe that, this team isn't actually that good, so we're not going to put them on a primetime spotlight, especially when the Dolphins have not really had that focus as much this year. And it's Tua versus Herbert. Like, obviously, to me, it's a no-brainer. Put that in primetime.
Yeah.
Why not? All right.
Colts. Smaller markets, but a better game.
Yeah. Dolphins are fun. They're scoring a ton of points.
Sure.
Why would you not want to watch that team right now? And Tua might be MVP. Like, he's in that conversation. Colts at Cowboys. I mean, this just feels like a lock. The Cowboys, like, often a defensive line. Micah Parsons is going to wreck anything the Colts are putting out there on their offensive line. Cowboys can do enough to limit Jonathan Taylor and just go after Matt Ryan all game long. I'm not taking Jeff Saturday here. Give me the Cowboys. It's on Sunday Night Football. I'm not scared
of
Dallas.
What is the line on that?
11 points. Cowboys are 11-point favorites.
It's a big line.
Okay, take the points then.
I'll take the points. Go 11. I'll take the 11. I think that there's a backdoor cover here.
Okay. That Cowboys Giants game was closer, I thought, than the score indicated. Dak making a lot of bad decisions this year, I feel like, or bad throws. He's been picked off, you know, a decent amount. Uncharacteristically, I think, for him, for his career. I don't know if that's just who he is now or we're having a weird year or what. I said it's the RJ. I've had just enough of the OBJ reports. There's been like a billion reports. Just sign them or don't sign. Like, why do we have to, like, 50 reports and like act?
OBJ is eating that up a little bit.
Oh, sure. But it's just like, it's all it is leading to is like, no way living up to the hype. He wasn't even that good last year. When he got on the Rams, he had 5 touchdowns. Yeah, but he averaged like 11 point whatever yards per catch and he got hurt. And that's the thing. He's coming off an ACL tear in mid-February. Like, this is not an amazing... Anyway, whatever. I think the Cowboys win. Although...
By the way, I love the report that Jerry Jones, unfazed by the airline incident where... Yeah. I guess there's a couple different stories floating around here. It's probably somewhere in the middle where OBJ probably wasn't super cooperative.
You got to use the term allegedly, Jimmy. You got to cover yourself.
Allegedly, wasn't super cooperative. Didn't have a seatbelt on. Well, who knows what exactly? I don't think the airline, they're bringing the plane back to the gate just because he had something over his head and didn't have a seatbelt on.
Right.
And like, anyway,
yeah, like airplanes love to do that, right? Just to like stop the whole plane for no good reason.
But I love the idea that Jerry Jones is unfazed by that. Of course. Oh, really? Because he also wasn't unfazed when Greg Hardy assaulted a woman by throwing her on a sofa full of guns.
I disagree.
So I go, oh, really? He wasn't unfazed by a guy who didn't have a seatbelt on?
I think he was. It was like that. Was like, oh, actually, now we're definitely you have to sign him at this point. And he actually made him more enticing. Right.
Oh, this guy is a cowboy.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah. He fits in here. That brings us to you're taking the points, but you're taking the Cowboys to win, right? Yeah, you said backdoor cover. Are you there? Hello? Well, I can't hear Jimmy, so that's not a good thing. But I will for John.
I am here. I'm back.
Oh, okay. Where did you go?
I don't know. I just lost. I lost you there for a second, for a minute. Yeah, I can hear you now. I hid your video, so that's not clogging up my the speed of the internet. I guess right now.
Thank you. Well, Rachel, if you want to cut that out, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Leave it in. It's at the end. These are the diehards that are still listening.
I mean,
at this point.
You can listen to this part, but like maybe some of the dead air. Like cut out some of the dead air. From like 10 seconds for 20 seconds down to like 5. Anyway, thank you, Rachel. By the way, you know, go follow Rachel on Twitter if you haven't, and Instagram and everything already. She does a lot of great work for BGN behind the scenes. Even if she's not on the podcast speaking. At Rachel Monique is how you follow her. So that's RACHELEMONIQUE. Give her a follow. Shout out to Rachel. All right. Titans at Eagles. The Eagles opened as 6.5-point favorites, if I'm not mistaken. And that line's down to 5.
Big line.
They're only 5-point favorites right now. So that's
Is it okay? Yeah.
Who do you have in this one?
You know what? I was going to take the Titans at 6.5. I thought that's what it was. But down at 5? I'm still taking the Titans. Wow. Yeah, I'll take the Titans plus 5. I think this is going to be a struggle. Like, I think the Eagles win. But yeah, I think I'll take that 5.
Like, again, they have not allowed more than 20 points since the bye. So it's the thing.
Yeah,
like,
it could be a low-scoring
game.
Even if
the Eagles beat them, it's like, are they going to put a ton of points on them?
You can win this. Like, this game could be 24-20 and still be sort of a comfortable Eagles win. But on the scoreboard, it looked like it was close, you know? And I think that's kind of like what the Titans – I think that's how the Titans roll.
Like points are, like, so easy to take here. I think the Eagles win the game. I'm going to take the Eagles to win because – again, like the Titans are not unbeatable. They're tough for sure. And the Eagles will have to work for this win. But I think they're up for the challenge. I was encouraged by the Packers game overall. I think that was a step in the right direction after losing to the Commanders and then an uninspiring performance against the Colts that I thought was uncharacteristic from the coaching staff, Nick Sirianni and Shane Steichen mostly. And I think that proved to be true. Obviously, the run defense is a concern. But again, it's not like, okay, the Titans are like running wild on teams and putting up a gajillion points. So I don't think it's like that big of a deal in terms of the Eagles are going to give up 30 or something in this spot. So, and if they do, again, they have the offense to be able to kind of put up some points. I do worry about the Jim Schwartz revenge game. I think that is very real. I recall Jim Schwartz getting carried off the field. And if I'm not mistaken, having his players carry him off the field.
When yeah, Buffalo yeah, in Detroit.
Lions, like Jim Schwartz is like kind of like a psycho. Like I think like he and I'm not like criticizing him. I'm just saying like he cares a lot. And I think he's a very intense person. And I don't think it's lost on him. Not that like the Eagles necessarily wronged him, because he like ultimately he walked away and like fire him. But I do think there is something to like Schwartz knowing that he got a lot of guff in Philly and kind of wanting to stick that like to the fans and everyone. And regardless if the organization did him wrong, it's the team that used to employ him. I think he wants to kind of stick it to them. So that does worry me, because I think the Titans defense is going to play very inspired football, as they usually do. But I'll take the Eagles to win. I'm going to say like 20-17. It's going to be a close game. Might come down to the Jake Elliott field goal at the end. Titans cover, but the Eagles win the game and advance to 11-1. They really have to keep winning here, because they don't have a lot of room for error if the Cowboys continue to win. And obviously that game on Christmas Eve looms large.
Okay. Yeah, I see this as like, I like that 24-20 score that I gave, where they're up 21-20 and they have the ball and they take a lot of time off the clock. And then they kick a field goal, not to ice it necessarily, but leaving the Titans little time to have to drive the field for a touchdown late in the game. Again, that's how I would categorize like a sort of comfortable win, but you know, the scoreboard wouldn't indicate it. That's kind of how I see that game going.
Any final thoughts, James?
Yeah, I enjoyed Thanksgiving with the Roach family. Good times with my daughter. My mom came along on Thanksgiving as well. So yeah, my daughter, my mom, Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors, Kristen Roach of Roach Realtors family. Yeah, good times all around. Thankful for family. Thankful for our listeners. And thank you for all for keeping me and Brandon employed.
Yes, I feel that. I want to give a shout out to, I don't know, I had one and I forget what it was. So maybe no shout out. I did want to shout out Red Crest Kitchen once again, which I previously plugged, but I want to give them another shout out, because I think they're up and coming, and I think people should check them out in Queen Village in Philly on 6th and Bainbridge. So give that a shot if you haven't already, if you're visiting. Getting a lot of, I think more than ever, maybe because of talking about food so much on the podcast, a lot of like DMs, people, big flex by me, of people like asking me for restaurant recommendations for when they're visiting Philly, which I don't mind responding to. So if you are traveling to see an Eagles game, including this week against the Titans, hit me up. I can give you some recommendations. Obviously, Woodrow's is the place to go for the cheesesteak. That's just, you know, I talk about it all the time. But if you need another place, I can gladly try to point you in the right direction. And then I appreciate when those people also follow up with how it went, because like I want to know if it was a good recommendation or not, you know what I mean? So give me some feedback too if you liked it or not. I appreciate that to know if you know, I should continue to steer people in that direction. But yeah, that's all I've got. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Gauton and Instagram at Brandon Gauton. Follow Jimmy Kemsky on Twitter and Instagram at Jimmy Kemsky. You can check out at @BGN_radio for the podcast Twitter account, at Bleeding Green for the blog Twitter account. BleedingGreenNation.com is where you will find my work and the work of all of the wonderful writers we have on staff there. A lot of good content up on the site, so BleedingGreenNation.com. Check it out. Click all the articles a billion times so we can take over the world. Also, Jimmy Kemsky is on his work. You can find at PhillyVoice.com, including his Eagles-Titans matchups column that you should check out to kind of go hand-in-hand with this podcast. If you're looking to help support the podcast, which is free, but if you want to help support us, you go to righttosellin.com. You use discount code BGN15 for 15% off your order to get the best meat snacks in the game. If you're looking to buy, sell, or rent a house, or looking to, you know, maybe connect with a realtor in a different state, or you're looking to buy a house, maybe you need some advice, whatever. And if anything in that realm, you want to go to roachrealtors.com to contact Kristen Roach, or you can text or call this phone number.
856-906-9295.
She's very nice, and I'm sure very responsive. Best realtor in the universe, as voted on by God. So definitely contact her. We will be back with you next week after the Eagles advance to 11-1.
Goodbye, everybody.
BGN.